Welcome to the workshop of working with others with special needs. I'm Suzanne, a grateful compulsive eater. Paula is here in Loretta, and I want us to start off with a serenity prayer, please. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, is there anyone here who is new or returning? If you are, clap. Anyone new or returning? No? Is there anyone celebrating a CAHEL birthday today? Oh, maybe later. Okay, this workshop, Working with Others with Special Needs, is going to be a little fun and informative. We want you to leave here knowing, thinking, believing that you can work with someone with a special need. It's not to be something to be frightened of or mysterious. Like, okay, I've got some information, I can do this. But we're also going to have a little fun today. And this workshop is going to close at 5 p.m. And first of all, I'd like Dave to read Chapter 5, How It Works, and let's listen closely to what it says. Dave, would you like to come up to the microphone, please? And then please sign in the release form. This is being recorded, so please sign the release form. And if you have any questions you would like to share and you come up to the microphone, please sign the release form as well.
I'll sign it.
Name's David.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, everybody. I'm a compulsive eater. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're such unfortunates, they're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our story discloses in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at a command, we begged it to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. Well, there's one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Susan.
Also, I'd like to remind everybody that we are a anonymous program, so there's no taking of pictures in the workshop rooms. And if you take pictures in the banquet room or someplace else, please make sure that you don't get other people in the picture. So please be respectful of that. No recording and no taking any pictures. Okay? All right. Next, I would like Cheryl to read our announcement about working with others. And we have a handout. If anybody wants a handout, I think, is someone handing them out? Okay, I think you've all received one, but Cheryl, could you please come to the microphone and read that, please?
I'm reading Sponsoring CAHEL.
At the microphone. I can't hear you. I don't think you're on the microphone. Please.
Okay. Sponsoring CAHEL members with special needs. CAHEL is a fellowship that welcomes everyone, including members with cognitive or developmental impairment, physical disabilities, visual impairment, dyslexia, mental illnesses, etc. Our program is inclusive, not exclusive. Based on tradition three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. We find that the CA Help program can easily be modified to fit the special needs of our members. We demonstrate compassion, empathy, and love for our disabled sponsees. Below are some guidelines and best practices we found that CA Help sponsors can use when working with a sponsee who has special needs. These are meant to be helpful suggestions only. Get to know your sponsee. We may find that due to personal limitations, sponsees may be unable to answer a question a day. Have an honest conversation and set realistic guidelines. Ask basic questions on what challenges the sponsee faces and what their needs are. Let your sponsee do their own work. It's best not to coddle or enable. Discuss what formats, audio, etc., can be used for answering questions, i.e. first 30-day questions and other writings. Decide on a reasonable timeline. Guide sponsees to resources. CA Howe offers recorded literature which can facilitate listening to various chapters of the Big Book, the 12 and 12, and the first 30-day questions and other literature. A recording can be made of the sponsee's answers to a question so that the sponsor can listen to it at their appointed time together. Identify meeting locations that will meet your sponsee's needs. AA literature such as AA Comes of Age, Alcoholics Anonymous, The Big Book, AA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, and Daily Reflections are available in large print, braille, and on audio recordings. Many people are abstinent in the program today, partly due to the patience and understanding of an empathetic sponsor. Any sponsor can sponsor someone with cognitive or other disability. You need not be afraid. Some basic compassion, patience, and understanding is all that is required. The patience that we as sponsors need in this program is sometimes learned through the process of working with a sponsee who challenges us. We are not healthcare professionals. Remember, love and tolerance of others is our code. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 84. The determination of the disability is between you, your sponsee, your higher power, and the healthcare professional. We are sure that if you decide to work with a disabled sponsee, you will both reap benefits. The following literature is available in braille and large print: Forever Abstinence, Sponsor Guidelines, the audio of the first 30-day questions for members with special needs can be special ordered through WSO. To order large print or braille literature or the first 30 days audio, contact the World Service Office at gso@cahow.org. Request for Forever Abstinent, Sponsor Guidelines, and the first 30-day audio should be placed by the sponsor. The sponsor or sponsee may then order the literature. Other CA Howe literature can be custom ordered. Spanish literature is available upon request in large print or braille. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cheryl. Okay. Having all read that, we are going to demonstrate some toys. I call them toys. You know, every time we get something new, it's okay, a brand new toy to play with. But it's my equipment, and I take it very seriously. We're first going to have Loretta share some stuff, and I'm going to pass the microphone to Loretta.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I am a compulsive eater. My name is Loretta, and I am from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi. Is this too loud, or is this okay?
Good.
Good. Okay. So I decided to time myself for 7 minutes for about the qualification and the what happened, and then I'm going to go into the solution after that, hopefully. So there we go. I've been in CA Howe since it started in 1996, and I don't have that much abstinence. On Monday, if God willing, if I'm granted that much abstinence, I'll have 8 years back-to-back recommitted abstinence. So I'm very grateful to God, and I'm very grateful to this fellowship, because I couldn't have done it without either one or both. Okay, in 1986, I got sick at Christmas time, and I thought I had the flu, and it wasn't the flu. It was something called chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome and fibromyalgia. And the doctors couldn't make up their minds what I had. Some said I was just depressed, some said I had it. I went back and forth with them. I went to work, I quit jobs, I took jobs, blah, 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 blah. But I kept kind of going downhill over time. I was a very active person. I used to ride my bike 10 miles a day. I used to swim, used to hike up mountains. I did yoga 4 times a week. I was teaching classes. And one day I found that my whole energy level just felt like somebody had kicked it right in the middle of it. So I didn't know what was going on for about 5 years. I finally went to California, got diagnosed for sure, and came back to the little town I was living in and went to a horrible relapse, because I didn't know I couldn't take a plane trip without getting sick. So I have not had a break from the illness for 32 years, and it's manifested itself in all kinds of ways, and I was in the program the whole time. First I was in OA How, and then in 96 when it became See How, I was in See How. And those questions baffled me. How was I going to get a question a day in? I couldn't read, I couldn't write. I had to have other people write out my bills for me and pay them. So, because there's a lot of cognitive problems that went with it. So it occurred to me one day that what I could do is read the question into a tape recorder, play that question back over and over and over again, and then into another tape recorder, I could read my answers. And I found people that were willing to do that with me. And I'd hold up the phone to my little tape recorder, because just a minute. And so that worked for me. That's how I got through my first 30 days, and it took a long time. It took months to do that way. But I was able to do it. And then the inventory was a little easier because it wasn't reading involved. Because I also have the 12 and 12 and the big book on tape. So I could listen to all the readings that were required on tape. And I would, you know, reverse and play again, because things are just not going into my head. So I did okay for a while. And then I got hit really, really badly in 1997 with a very terrible relapse of this illness, not the compulsive eating, but the chronic fatigue. And I went to bed about 20 hours a day. So what I could do was make as many meals as I could in 4 hours and then go back to bed. And I started going down to 2 meals a day and then 1 meal a day. And then I had sponsors that were like enabling that. But so I got very sick, needless to say. My abstinence went down the toilet, and I was doing all kinds of strange things with food. And not until I got back abstinent about 8 years ago with a really good, structured sponsor who listened to me, who herself was not ill, but who continued to push me up to my limits to do what I needed to do for this program. And I would write my food down every single day. I would call it into her. You know, we'd do our drill. I weighed and measured all the food. And coming out, and I was calling myself abstinent because I had a sponsor before that who said, oh, you're abstinent, it's fine. And I had to recommit and redefine because I wasn't. And that was very painful for me because I have an ego. And, you know, to say that I wasn't, that I've been in this long and only had a certain amount of abstinence was hard. But anyway, I did it. And I've watched myself get better and better and better over the years. It's a slow process because every time I relapsed, I set myself way back. And so I had to crawl back up from that relapse. I don't recommend it to anybody. You know, if you're abstinent, stay abstinent. And if you're not abstinent, stay in the rooms. And keep calling your sponsor, keep going to meetings. Relapse sucks. There's no other way to describe it. Also, during that time, I had let go of my higher power. I was very, very, very angry at God. And I had a sponsor in another 12-step fellowship who was who had a guru, an Indian guru, and he told me to to that there was no such thing as God and all this other stuff, and had me follow, get books about his Indian guru. So I did it. And I lost my higher power, and I'm sure that was another big reason I lost my abstinence. So I realized that wasn't working for me, and I got my higher power back. And so one of the things that I've tried to do is I stay close to my own concept of God. I follow the directions in the first 164 pages of the Big Book. I do all seven tools each and every day, and I have to remember these are requirements, not suggestions. It's not just a good idea that we do these seven tools. It's what I do. And I actually had a night 2 weeks ago where I went to bed. I was almost asleep. It was like 10:30 at night. I went, oh, man, I didn't make my third outreach call. Turned on the lights, called somebody in California because I'm on Eastern time. And they answered, and I talked to them, and I went back to bed. I don't even know what I said. But I made my three outreach calls. Now, every once in a blue moon, I get hit with such bad weakness that I can't sit up in bed, I can't move my arms, and I can't move my legs. And I can sit there and I can, you know, do that on a phone and call my sponsor and tell her what's going on. She said, do the best you can today. And I pray through that. I just pray and I pray and I pray. And I sleep and I pray and I sleep. And lo and behold, something happens where I can get through. I can wheel myself into the kitchen. I can get a meal made. One of the things I've had to learn to do is let other people make my meals for me, weigh and measure my food for me. And if you didn't think that was hard for me, it was so hard. I think I was crying when I first had to do it. So, but I have caregivers, and these women know nothing about compulsive eating. They know nothing about weighing and measuring your food. And a lot of them have food problems themselves. And they say, why are you doing this? And you don't need to lose any weight. I go, I'm not on a diet. It's a food plan. It's medically required. I just tell them that, and that shuts them up. So I had to sit there, and I had to teach people how to level off my cups and level off my tablespoons and know 4.2 ounces isn't just as good as 4 ounces. And I just would watch them like a hawk. So in the meantime, I'm sitting there dealing with my control issues, but knowing I've got to get my meals made and I've got to get them made right. And that has really helped me a lot. I had to do this just last weekend. I didn't know if I was coming to this conference, this convention, because I was in bed last weekend on my face, and my caregiver was making my meals for me and doing everything else for me. I couldn't even get into the shower. And I told another fellow member, I said, I don't think I'm gonna be able to make it to the program, to the convention. And she said, just act as if you're going. So when I felt better, I pulled my suitcase out of the closet. It was still packed because I just made a move recently. I said, I'm never gonna do this. This is never gonna happen. But she just kept telling me, act as if, just act as if. And my caregiver came over and she helped me pack, and she brought my suitcase down to the main floor, and the paratransit picked me up and away I went. And so I'm here, and it was a miracle. I couldn't do this without a higher power. I couldn't do this without understanding people in the program who don't know anything about this disease, but who I go, I can't get out of bed and make my meal. I can't read. I can't write. And they talk to me, you know. And there's certain ones I'll talk to, and certain ones I know don't call them because they don't get it. So I use this program. I use this program like crazy to get through this. And let's see. There's a lot of people that have the illness that I have, and most of them have a food problem, as I've found out throughout the years. They eat a lot of sugar and they eat a lot of food to comfort themselves, and I know that that for me was not a comfort. So I get to deal with this disease. I get to deal with this disease with no addictions. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't use drugs, I won't even go on the doctor's painkillers, and I don't, what else don't I do? I don't do a lot of things. But so I get to just feel it, and sometimes it feels like it's too much to feel. I use page 86, 87, 88 to start my day with every morning. And one of the things it tells me in there is I ask God to divorce my thinking from self-pity. So if I even start to wake up with some self-pity for my condition, I'm asking God 10 minutes later, please, you know, keep me out of self-pity, because that's not going to help me. And today I was in another workshop, and I heard a man talk about a medical incident he had almost 2 years ago. And he said the same thing to himself when he thought he was possibly dying that I say to myself on the days I feel like I'm dying, and that is, God, if you want me, if you are ready for me, I'll go. But if not, if you want me here on this planet, I'll stay on the planet. But please let me somehow get rid of my journals before I go, because I don't want anybody to find that stuff. So, you know, I need to be ready. This is going to sound very dramatic, but I need to be ready to die anytime. And I also need to be ready to live anytime. And sometimes that's even the harder thing to do. But that's what it does feel like for me on certain days. It feels like I am dying. I have trouble breathing. I can't keep my head up. I can't do a lot of things. I've crawled to the bathroom before, lots of times. And some people are very kind and gentle, and they say, you know, you'll probably get through this. So anyway, basically what I do is I ask my higher power to help me to work my program today, no matter what. Sometimes the only prayer I can get out in the morning, because I get very tired in the morning, is to say, God, help me to stay abstinent, clean, and sober today, no matter what. I don't care what else happens, just help me to do this. And he does. So far he's been doing it for 8 years, almost 8 years, not 8 years yet. I don't know what else to say about that. I call people in the program who I know work this program like their life depends on it, because my life does depend on it. I've been in mental institutions. I've been in treatment centers for my eating disorder. I have been on the streets. I have been, you know, rooting through garbage cans looking for food when I didn't have to do that. I've gone through all kinds of craziness with my disease, and I don't want my disease back. And I don't want also to not be able to eat like I was for years, because what that does is it starts to trigger my starting to grab whatever is out there to eat that I can get into my body. So I take it one day at a time, one meal at a time. And that's all I got. I just got today. And my higher power, the big book tells me, I've got abstinence today contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So the most important thing for me in my life is to maintain my spiritual condition and to have my food ready. And I take my food with me when I go places. I personally don't eat in a restaurant. That's me. I don't tell my sponsees they can't eat in restaurants. I just tell them they need to weigh and measure there. And I know that the big book, that the gray book tells us we don't have to, but in the tools it says we do. In the tools it says that's required. So I choose to follow the tools. That's what I do. And I say, you can eat in Timbuktu if you want. Just bring your scale and your measuring cups. And that's how I sponsor. But I tell them that they can choose whatever they want for their sponsees. Either they don't have to weigh and measure in a restaurant, or they do. So that's very important. And some days, all I do is the basics. All I do is my abstinence, and I get in as much prayers as I can, and my tools, and that's it. So that's it for me, and I'm going to pass. I pass to Paul.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to hear from Paula, and Paula's going to tell us what works for her and where she's from. I give you Paula.
Hi, guys. I'm Paula, very, very definitely a compulsive eater.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, guys. And thank you guys for being here and listening to us. I am, my abstinence date, by the grace of God, in this program, is March 10th of 2010, and which I'm just so grateful for. It's truly a major miracle, and because I've been up and down the scale for years. And food addiction runs real strongly in my family. My dad, when he died, was 5'8" and 315 pounds, and he was the one that raised me, so that was my role model for dealing with food. And I know if he were alive, he'd be really glad that I'm in this program. And I have bipolar disorder and Parkinson's, and I've been pretty bad off with both disorders, but I've gotten some really good help, and I would say it's not under control, but it's a lot more manageable. And my therapist, my last therapist said that it's a full-time job to manage my moods. And so I have to work this program so that I can deal with my moods effectively, to keep me out of the food. And it's not just keeping out of the food, but it's to feel be in a good place emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And that truly is a gift from God. And I do start off my morning, well, first thing I do, I have is say my prayers, and I am on medicine for both disorders. If anyone has any questions after this session, they can ask me. I do start off my day with my prayers that I've learned from this program and other 12-step programs, but prayers from the Big Book, and that's unusual for me because I used to be an atheist. I used to not believe in God. Really, I think I was angry at God, but I don't feel so much anger at God. Everything has happened for a reason, and when I would, because my tremors used to be so bad, I would answer my questions just verbally, and that worked pretty well. And I would just say whatever came off the top of my head. And so in a way, that's good because it's spontaneous, and it was authentic. And I still do that. I can write now, but only slowly. So it still works best for me to give my answers verbally to my sponsor. And I was in another food addiction program before I came to this one. And in that program, I lost my weight. But after being in CHOW, I would say it's helped maintain my weight. I really believe if I were still in the other program, I would have gained my weight back. And because CHOW is so well organized and so structured and just so effective and so positive that I feel like it's helped me maintain my weight loss. And for me, that's a major miracle. And when I was in the other food program, my sponsor kept, she made me work harder for my recovery than the other sponsors did in that program. And I kind of thought, why is she being so hard on me? But now I see what she was doing. And I didn't know that she was in CHOW also. And she traveled around the world for her job, and I kept wondering, how does she maintain her abstinence without going to all these meetings because she travels? Well, I didn't know that she was using the phone bridge for her support. And she's got at least, I'd say, about 20 plus years of abstinence. And she works a really good program. And anyway, I was going through my Parkinson's diagnosis, and my tremors were awful. They were horrible. And I was really upset about the fact that I was being diagnosed with Parkinson's, and I was real into self-pity about it. And I wouldn't do she was having me do like a question a day, and I wasn't doing the questions. I just talked about my self-pity about having Parkinson's. And then she just finally said, I hate to tell you this, but the solution isn't answering the questions. And when she said that, it made me so mad. I wanted to reach my arms out through the phone and choke her. I mean, I didn't want to hear that. But she was right. And what it forced me to do, and I'm really grateful to her for this, and I told her about it later, was that it forced me to stay out of self-pity and be grateful for today and try and live in the now and in the present. And that was really helpful, and I thanked her for that, for her not letting me stay in self-pity. And she said that she only allows her sponsees 3 days of self-pity. And so, and she's a hard sponsor, but I'm really grateful to her. And she's also the one that told me about the phone bridge meetings, and I can never thank her enough. I will say, though, too, when I was going through my Parkinson's diagnosis, I was getting so angry, and I was wanting to overeat, like, really bad. I was so mad about having this disease of Parkinson's on top of the fact that I'm bipolar. And I thought, well, and I said to my husband, well, screw it. I'm going to the store. I said, I'm getting a can of my favorite binge food. And my husband said, well, you can't because Chris, that's our son, Chris took your car to go to work. So I couldn't get my favorite binge food. And that was definitely, you know, God watching out for me. And I'm very grateful for that. I do have one thing that's positive, though. Even though I have Parkinson's, and this is definitely a God deal, I was able to have the brain surgery for it. And I don't shake anymore. And I have like two electrodes on the top of my head, and I have a wire running through the back side of my head and then down to my chest, right above my chest, and I have a little battery in there. And I have this magnet that is hooked up, has electricity in it, except when you charge it. And I charge it every morning for about an hour and 15 minutes. And it keeps me, and then I'm good for the day. And then I don't shake. And it's just wonderful. And it is so neat. And so a lot of times people don't even know that I have Parkinson's because I don't shake anymore. And my tremors used to be so bad. I weigh about 118 right now, but I got down to 112 because my tremors were so bad. I was shaking so much. And my sponsor, she had said this, and she didn't see me because, you know, she was my Sea House sponsor then. And she said, well, how many extraneous tremors are you having? And she was right. I was shaking so much that I was burning calories, and I got down too little in my weight. And but now with the surgery, I don't shake anymore. And then as far as the bipolar disorder goes, I had to find a sponsor to do my fourth and fifth step with, somebody that was familiar with bipolar disorder. Because there's, with the bipolar disorder, there's a lot of shame-based activities, a lot, and they're pretty bad. And but she, it turned out, I found her through somebody on the phone bridge, somebody who was bipolar on the phone bridge. I talked to her, and I didn't have her be my sponsor because she wasn't very stable. But I asked her who her sponsor was, and so this sponsor took me through the fifth step. Turns out she was a mental health therapist, and her specialty was mental illness and bipolar disorder. So she had a real good understanding of the disease and was able to help me deal with it and help me forgive myself, help me realize that I'm a child of God, and that I deserve recovery just like anybody else does. But this sponsor unfortunately left the program, but I am really grateful to her for the time that she did spend with me, taking me through the fifth step. And then I got another sponsor, and I've had her for about 7 years now, seven and a half years. And her deceased husband was bipolar, so she is familiar with the disorder, and she's just a great sponsor. And she can laugh at herself about her things. She has a usually positive attitude and is very upbeat and very understanding. And she's become kind of like a second mom to me. She's been really helpful. But she'll still call me on my stuff too. And because I've been so open about the fact that I am bipolar, I've had some sponsors in program that know me refer their sponsees to me, not to sponsor them, but as an extra support to help them deal with their bipolar disorder or other mental illness. And so that's been helpful. And I was able to help one sponsee of a friend, help her get disability and get on. I referred her to an organization that was a very low-cost organization to help her get her disability, and she did. She got her disability, and so I'm glad they were able to help her, and I was able to help her, too, when she was hospitalized in a psychiatric hospital, and yet she was still keeping her food abstinent, even in the hospital, which I thought was good. And so I was able to help her out with that some. And then I was able to help out another friend in program, help him deal with his bipolar disorder and help him deal with his meds. I'm like an extra support to him that I know that he knows that he can talk with me about this disorder. And then I have another friend who is schizoaffective, which is half schizophrenic, half bipolar. And I've helped her deal with her, she would have paranoia from time to time, and I'd help her deal with that. And she said that she'd want to leave the program. She was wanting to leave the program. I kept telling her to, trying to talk her into staying in the program, and she did. Well, now she's helping me when I'm squirrely. And so it's worked out to be a pretty neat thing. And I could talk with her just about anything. She's very understanding and very supportive. And also, I broke my shoulder about a little over 2 years ago because of the Parkinson's. I lost my balance and I fell really hard on our tile floors in the kitchen and broke my shoulder. And since then, my son, well, technically he's my stepson, but I mean, he's not even my real son, but yet he helps me make my lunch and my dinner every day. And like at clockwork, he's downstairs at noon helping me make my lunch, my dinner. And I listen to the noon meetings, well, they're 1 p.m. Eastern meetings, and I put them on speakerphone, and we both listen to them together. And he's in another 12-step program, so he's familiar with the AA literature in our meetings. But he says it helps him, and he's lost about 24 pounds, not necessarily following our food plan, but just by eating less and being more selective in his choices. And he's just a wonderful support, and he calls me mom, which is so neat. And I'm just really grateful for him and for my husband. And then on the weekends, my husband helps me with my meals. And the Parkinson Society said that one of the best ways to get over a chronic illness is to be part of a loving, supportive community. And that's what I get here in this program, is just a lot of love and support. And I mean, they say that it literally is good for your health to have all that support, and so I'm really grateful for it. And then also, I wanted to end this on a little humorous note. My sister used to have a bumper sticker on her VW van back when she was in college and said, "Even paranoids have enemies." That's all I got. And so if I can have a sense of humor about my disorder, you know, then that makes it easier for me to deal with it. Thank you, guys.
Okay, I'm just going to take about 10 minutes, probably, even though I can always talk as long as you let me. But I would like to get in. I'd like a volunteer to help me demonstrate a few things. I'm Suzanne. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. And hi, everybody. Thank you for being here, by the way. I've been abstinent since April 3rd of 2006. I've given away 85 pounds. I'm from Sherman Oaks, California, which is part of Los Angeles. And I'm a Food Inventory Step sponsor. And when I came into the program, I was 12-stepped by a teacher, and that was really helpful. I got a sponsor right away, and she, I did not know it at the time, but she sponsored 3 other people with medical stuff. And she herself had an issue, which I later found out. Oh, okay. And so it was helpful because I did not have any equipment to help me read the 12 and 12 in the big book. So she did some of the reading. She sometimes would put on a tape. Sometimes my mother was able to read to me and be of service to me, and it was helpful to her. But there were times my mother could not read. And so it took me 90 days to do the first 30-day questions. And when I stepped up as a food sponsor, I also took a trip for 90 days. And I was a little embarrassed, and my sponsor said, "But you did it. You know, forget the being embarrassed. You did it. You know, some people slip, you know, 25,000 times the first 30 days. You did it." And she wasn't on my case about you have to do a question a day or I'll fire you. I really, please, any of you, please, when you say I'm going to fire you, it's so, it can be very hurtful. It doesn't matter what for whatever reason. But I used to hear that a lot, you know, I'm going to fire you. Not from her, but I hear from other people. So she said, no, you know, you do a question the best of your ability, and as long as you do it and you're working your program, we move forward. So I was with her, and then I got my first sponsee, and she was on medical abstinence. And I'm going to talk a little bit about medical abstinence because the same thing. There's no reason to be fearful of sponsoring someone with medical abstinence, the same as sponsoring someone with a special need. And so my first sponsee showed up, and she had medical abstinence. And I said to my sponsor, what do I do? Because I heard some people snicker and make really snide remarks about medical abstinence. And she said, not a problem. You talk to her, you get her food plan, you get a note from her doctor. And that's what I did. My mother read it to me. It was a regular doctor. Was it something she made up? And she had the food plan, and not a problem. I don't have her issue, and I was not on medical abstinence at the time. And it was not an issue. And so I think the majority of my sponsees have been on medical abstinence. Not all of them, but most of them. And it's worked out very well. I had a sponsee that had medical abstinence, but she also was low vision. She had cerebral palsy, and then she was diagnosed with ALS. And I lost my beloved sponsee a couple of years ago. I'm about ready to cry. And she sponsored until practically the last day she took breath. She sponsored a few people, quite a few people actually, and she taught me a lot. And I'm grateful I was able to tell her that I love her, and she said the same thing. But I learned a lot on how to sponsor with different types of needs. For a while, she lost her voice. And her mother would call me, and then she would write down, you know, and the mother would tell me what she wrote. But then someone gave her a tablet with speech, so she was able to, because she could do it on her phone, but she got to the point where she really couldn't use her hands to type on the tiny buttons. So someone gave her a tablet, and she was able to touch somewhat and use a synthesizer, and then she would put it up to the phone, and that's how we communicated. And she still did her questions, and she still sponsored. And then she got her voice back, and I remember she had a talking scale. I've got one right here. We're going to show it off. And her caregiver actually accidentally knocked it off in the water and ruined it. And she said, what am I going to do? And I sent her another one because they're expensive, and I knew she couldn't afford it. When I first knew her, she lived alone, and she was able to prepare her foods with some help. But as she got worse, first they told her she had progressive cerebral palsy, and that was wrong. She had ALS undiagnosed. And then she lived with her mother, and her mother cooked for her, and we had a lovely conversation. She's a nurse. And she said, why must she not have refined, you know, the sugar and the flour? And I explained it to her. I referred her to the article about the flour and the sugar and a couple other things. And she said, okay, I get it. So she cooked for her. And when she no longer could read, I did have a CD. Someone in this program very graciously spent many, 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 many hours putting many questions on CD just for me. I gave her a copy of that so she can continue her step work. And so, you know, I didn't see it as a problem. There were days she couldn't do questions. There were days she could barely speak or had energy, but she always called me. She always called me. And I remember the last time I spoke to her, she said, can I speak to you later? I have been very, I haven't been sleeping, and I just went to sleep, but my alarm went off to call you. And that was the last time I spoke to her. She passed away. She slipped into a coma and passed a day and a half later. And I love that woman, young woman. But to be, you know, she taught me a lot, and I'm forever grateful to her. She was a good example. So with me, I first started doing my questions on cassette, and I still have my antiquated tape recorder my husband makes fun of. Still have it because new technology can go south. I have this digital recorder. Where is it? Oh, here it is, right in front of me. Okay, this little thing, it's great, but I bought one digital recorder and it had 32 buttons. I needed a computing engineer to try and figure that one out. I just want to record, right? So then I got a second one, and I think that one I'll be able to figure out how to use it once I have someone read the instructions and kind of show me. So this third one I bought, and it has speech, and it only has a few buttons, and that's my go-to to record. But I do need something better to record phone numbers, because this, once the battery dies, I'm going to lose all the information on it. So this is just to record questions and phone numbers that I need at the moment. And I'm going to show it off in a minute. Patience. You know, this program has taught me to be patient, because, and I had two good examples. My first sponsor was very patient with me. My second sponsor is very patient with me. And I have learned to be patient with my sponsees. As long as they're willing to do the work, it doesn't have to be perfect, because I got diagnosed with perfectionism the first few months in my program, and my very good friends said to me, "You stop being so, you have perfectionism, that's another program." And so I thought, oh dear, I've got my father's perfectionism, I've got to get rid of that one. And thank you, Dad. And so I had to kind of stop being quite, well, trying to be perfect. I had to have that acceptance of I'm not perfect, and that's just the way it is. I do the best that I can. As one of my spiritual guides, advisors, teachers told me, strive for excellence. I'm like, so that's what I strive for. So there are days I do better, and there are days that maybe not so good, but I do work my program. I call my sponsor. I have sponsees, many sponsees, probably too many. And they call me, and I do my outreach calls. And there are times, because it's some, well, right now it's okay, but one time I had so many sponsees, I couldn't keep track of, did I make an outreach call? Because I've been on the phone all day. So I had to keep track of my outreach calls. They were outgoing calls that I needed for myself. So I kind of had to cut back on sponsoring. My sponsor told me I had to cut back on service and sponsoring. And also the other thing is, I've been able to do service. I never thought I could do that. When I first came into program, I did service at the meeting level, things I could do like provide diet soda, take the literature list home. I mean, the literature home if someone was on vacation, take the phone list home. I couldn't read it, but I could take it home if the person was on vacation and bring it back the next week. But that was it. I did not put myself out there. I did not do that. And it took a while for me to be of service and be an intergroup rep on the phone bridge. A friend of mine told me I had to do it. And she said, we will find a way. In fact, yeah, someone else told me, we will find a way to do it. Because I kept getting, I don't know how you're going to do that. I don't know. But one person said, we are going to find a way to do it. And we did. So I did it. I have a good memory. I do not have a perfect memory. I do not have an excellent memory. I have a good one, but I try to work at it. I try to memorize phone numbers to stimulate my brain. So I do remember a lot of phone numbers. It's good for me. So I do that, and I've been able to do service. And the reason why I bring up service is because all three of us have been on the special needs committee. Loretta is a past member, and Paul and I are currently on the special needs committee. So if you have someone, if you know someone that's in this program or thinking about it, and they have a challenge, because let's face it, we all have challenges in life, whether they're a disability or emotional or, you know, someone else's challenge, and we take on other people's challenges, unfortunately. But whatever, please go to the website. It's a wonderful resource. And go to the website. There are phone numbers for people to call for support and information. And the literature's there. And we've worked hard on the committee to be able to reach out and say, if you have a special need, you can work this program. Thank you. Not only can you work this program, you can be of service. I just have to think of my sponsee that did a lot of service. She led meetings. And all I have to do is, the day that I think, I don't want to do service, I respect and remember my sponsee. So this is my message. You can do it. And if you know someone, tell them they can do it. And please go to the website, cahow.org. And I think it says special needs or accessibility, and we have a page there with phone numbers, and call us or send us an email. We will respond. And now it's time. I need a volunteer. Who would like to be a volunteer? I need a volunteer. A willing volunteer. Okay, Lynn. Okay. So first of all, we're going to demonstrate how to help someone walk. And you're thinking, what has that have to do with abstinence? Well, being of service is one of the tools, right? It's tool number, which tool is it? Okay, got it. Great. Okay, so tool number six. And to be of service, you know, you can be of service here. To get to this workshop, someone saw me with my little duffel bag on wheels and said, are you leaving? I said, no, I have to get to the workshop and it's late. So they brought me over. They were of service to me. And there are people that not only that are visually impaired, I like to say blind, low partial, they call them low partial, high partial, or blind, that they might need a helping hand or an arm. And you don't take their arm, you take their arm. And I'm going to show, and also people that need just a steady arm. So I'm going to show the do's and don'ts, okay? Watch me fall off the stage. Not yet. Okay. So I'm gonna demonstrate not what to do, and I'm gonna describe it in a second. So for the recording,
does this come off the stand?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. If it comes off the stand, I
there you go. Whoops. There goes the soda.
That's okay. I'm not supposed to drink it anyway. Okay. So here comes blind person. You know, walking down the hallway, not knowing where they're going. That's me most of the time. And I come, I'm like, can I take you? I'm grabbing the cane, okay, for those who are listening to this. I'm grabbing the cane up in the air. Please don't do that. That's not the way to do it, okay? And then the other, that's not the way. Here, let me help you. You don't do that. I'm sorry, did I hurt you?
No.
You don't do, I grabbed your arm up in the air. You don't do that either. Okay, so I offer my, you grab my elbow. That is one way. So I'm offering my elbow, and the person that is blind will take my elbow, and I will guide them. Also, you can put, if you're blind, or if you're going to guide somebody, I'm short, so this doesn't work for me. Their hand on the shoulder. The person that's guiding, the person that needs to be guided will put their hand on the shoulder. And then I am the guide. I'm walking, okay? And let's see. If you are in need of a strong arm, so, you know, like let's say you're a little shaky. The same thing. Your arm. Just grab my arm.
Okay.
And or any way you want to do it, because if I grab you, it's not really stable. Mm-hmm. You grab me, and that will steady the person. Okay. And so remember, don't grab the cane and don't grab the arm up in the air. I used to have someone that would grab both of my arms when trying to get in a medical van, and I'd fall backwards, and I kept telling him, please don't do that. You're hurting me. You're going to make me fall. And I had to show him like 20 times, offer your arm. And he finally, I made him do it. I did the other way. I said, okay, you're going to be me, and you're going to see. He's like, oh, I'm falling. I'm like, yeah, you're trying to push me backwards. So I got to, you know, does everybody understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one thing. Okay, don't go. Give me the cane.
Okay.
Okay, we'll put that in the ground. So this is one of the toys. This is a talking scale. And it also speaks Spanish, and it tells kilograms, too. When I brought it out of the airport, it was speaking Spanish and giving me kilograms, and I'm like, uh-oh. So it is multi. It's bilingual, and pounds or kilograms. So she's going to get on. You're going to hear what it says.
125.4 pounds.
Great. So that's one of the toys I have, and I also have one that actually gives me my BMI. But that one you have to see to set up, and it's complicated. And I couldn't bring that one because it's too sensitive. But that's my talking scale, so I know how much I weigh. And if you want to. Okay, and then. Okay, then I have my talking food scale. And I'm going to turn it on here, maybe.
Hello.
So then I'm going to put my digital recorder on here.
3.4 ounces.
And that is my talking scale. It also does Spanish, or it does metric.
96.2 grams.
Okay, and also does Spanish, but I think that button stuck. This is an old scale, and so if it gets broken on the way home, it's okay. It served me well. They are delicate. Lynn, thank you so much. They are delicate, so I don't go out to restaurants with them because they break, and they're expensive. The first one I had didn't work that well, and I had to send it back. This one has done really well, but they are delicate, and they break very easily. I had a sponsee that would take one to the restaurant. This is a funny story, a little bit. And she'd been blind since birth, so I have an idea what 4 ounces feels like, okay? She does not. And so she would take her talking scale, and they're quite loud. You can't adjust the volume. And we went to this very high-end seafood restaurant, and there was a small group. Some could see, some couldn't. She flips out her talking scale, and it's really loud. And one of the people is a psychologist. He's blind as well, so he's quite well-educated. He went ballistic because he says, "You're embarrassing us. Why are you doing this?" And, you know, on and on and on. And but the waiters loved it. They're like, "Wow, let's play with it." I don't know if the other customers appreciated it. She went through several scales because it kept breaking. She kept taking it everywhere. She finally kind of got the concept of the size, how much, you know, so she doesn't take it anymore. But they are delicate. And then the other thing I have is the talking digital recorder, which is simple for dummies like me.
Battery high.
Okay, and I'm going to do a small recording. It's flaky, even though it's digital. I have to wait for the beep. Okay, did you hear that? So it beeped. Okay, I'm doing a little test here for this workshop, showing my recorder for dummies. So it beeped. Okay, I'm doing a little test here for this workshop, showing my recorder for dummies. Okay, so those are my toys, and they have been very helpful. Doing questions with a smartphone can be helpful because smartphones have speech, but sometimes the voiceover is not that good, and there are issues with it. There was another funny story I had, and I can't remember it. But so I don't take my talking scale because it's too much of a burden for me, but I do, when I go out to restaurants, I generally take a quarter cup because it's more discreet, and tablespoon measuring spoon. And they're not special, I know what they are. I have a computer and it speaks, but I have not learned to use it yet, maybe one of these years. I'm not one of those tech-savvy disabled people. My husband is a computer geek, and he's blind, and my friend is the queen of all cell phones, and she's got tons. I mean, she has way too many phones. Probably another addiction for another program. But she's really good on her smartphone, both of them. But these are the things, adaptive equipment we can use. So to refresh, if you see someone, don't pull their cane. And or if you see someone with a guide dog and they're walking, don't go up and pet the guide dog. Big no-no, because the dog is working. If they're sitting, you can approach the person and say, "Gee, can I pet your guide dog?" And if they're nice, they'll say yes. And if they're they're not very nice, they might say no. Some people are don't touch the dog no matter what. But when they're working, you don't want to touch the dog because it'll be a distraction to them. And if someone is a little unsteady, offer you an arm. And the other thing is, if you're going in a narrow place, you put your arm behind you, so the person follows behind you, and they know, oh, it's going to get narrow. And then you put out on the side again. And these are the things I've learned and helped. I'm not the only blind person in program. There are others. Some of them never say they're blind, but I know some of them. Some do. Because they want to be treated like anyone else. And I have learned that. I am just another compulsive eater here. I qualify first, second, third as a compulsive eater. Being blind, it just happens to be part of the picture, but not the whole picture. It doesn't define who I am. And just because it took many years to finish all 12 steps, and I have a sponsee that was laughing her head off about that, It does not diminish the recovery I have here, though it took me a while. It does not diminish the recovery any one of us has. We may not be perfect, but none of us are. It does not diminish any of that. I just have to sometimes work it differently, that's all. And so if any of you know someone, be passionate about wanting to be open to working with them, or be patient. I'm passionate. I'm just so grateful that my two sponsors have that open door. When my first sponsor left program temporarily and I needed a new sponsor, I called many people and they knew who I was, and they're like, they hesitated a lot. And I said, you know what, that's okay. And a friend of mine, the same that told me to give up perfectionism, she said, Sue, you've got to get a sponsor because you're going to be white knuckling it. And I looked for one, and I found one, and she said, oh, I will sponsor, I'd love to, but you have to wait. I don't know what she said, a month or 2 months, because I'm in the middle of writing a screenplay. I said, oh, that's okay. You're in the middle of writing a screenplay. I don't want to bother you. I'll wait. And my friend once again took me aside, and she said, she might be the best sponsor, but she's not for you. Get someone else. And this woman, this friend, has never been my sponsor, but she's given me really good orderly direction. So I put it out there. Three people, unbeknownst to each other, recommended the woman that I have and have had now for 14 years, a little less than 14 years. And I called her and I said, hello, I'm Suzanne. I'm a blonde with a white cane. You may not have met me. And she said, oh, yeah, I know who you are. I said, well, my sponsor, I'm looking for, and she said, I'd love to sponsor you. I did not have to finish the sentence. And I knew it was meant to be. She did not hesitate 1 second. And this is the woman that walked me down the aisle, decorated my wedding, the one that I call when I really, need to. So, and I'll throw this in there too. Not only did I work my program the first few years blind, literally and figuratively in many ways, I also took care of my mother. And it was hard to put a time aside for me, but as time went by, I learned if that meant I had to get up before in the morning to put aside an hour or two, that's what I had to do. And that's really important. So I learned to take care of myself with my, it takes me longer. It takes me longer to do the questions. I have a scanner now so I can scan the booklets, but it takes longer. I know how long it takes if I had vision. I remember I only went blind in 1998. It takes a while to scan. So when I do a question, it may take maybe two or three times longer than it would someone who could see. So it's time consuming, but I'm worth it. And I have to remember that. I'm worth putting in the time and effort in. I am worth it. So I'm going to open it up. That's all I need to share. And thank you. Are there any questions or anyone who would like to share an experience or any questions? Anyone is open and free to share or ask a question. But please come to the microphone and then sign in, please. Anybody?
I do have a question, but I'm signing in, so just a second.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to try the talking weight scale, please come up and you can get on there. The weight challenge. Okay,
this question I've kind of been thinking about ever since Loretta was talking about her situation. She said that sometimes a sponsor can be a little enabling and not trying to get you to do what you can really do. And I'm trying to figure that out with my sponsees that don't have disabilities, but that is just something that's difficult. And so Loretta, I'm wondering what your sponsor did, how did she push you, and how were you able to communicate with her that you were really trying, even though it was slower for you? I mean, I'm just wondering how that all worked.
Thank you for the question. The first thing was that I was willing to do anything she told me to do. and that was the main ingredient. And she would push me to the point where I would say, you know, I don't think I can do that. She says, okay, what can you do? And we would break it down, And there was something she wanted me to do, like she wanted me to learn the computer, how to email all my food to her on the computer and sort of get a template, and so I could just sort of fill things in, and I would email that to her so that we would have more time to talk. I resisted that, like, I can't do this, I'm not good on the computer, you're good on the computer, I'm not good on the computer. She said, you really need to learn to do this. And she didn't let up. And she would repeat things 10 and 20 times to me. However, the key here that I would say is that I had the willingness and to go to any length for my abstinence. I had the willing, and I did what she told me. I just did what she told me to do. And I've had sponsees that don't have that kind of willingness. It's very frustrating for me. And I have wasted a lot of time and a lot of energy. And I don't know how to say this. She was loving, but she was, you know, somewhat hard-lined. But I need that kind of structure. I don't do well with loosey-goosey program.
I think that's true with us all.
So,
that's why we're here.
I don't know if that was helpful at all.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Suzanne wants to share too.
Yeah. You know, once we had the special needs committee, someone called me at the direction of her sponsor, and this woman had cognitive issues. It was apparent, a very sweet person. And she'd lost a lot of weight, and she'd had, 70 some days. She'd already lost a lot of weight. So she's working her program, doing the outreach calls, doing everything else, but she was having a hard time answering the questions because some of them are broken down in A, B, or C, or, you know, some of the questions are complicated. And the first few, I guess the first 30 days, the sponsor was like, it's fine. I think she was on question 20 and she was like day 76, something like that. And I don't know what happened, but the sponsor said, if you don't do a question a day, I can't work with you. And, you know, I said, do you have a CD player? Nope. Do you have a tape recorder? Nope. Okay. She did have a friend that would read the question and break it down because she needs to hear it over and over again. So the friend would read it a few times. And let's say there are several parts to the question. She would just say, here's this part. And that was what she would answer that day. And she says, I can't do more than that. And someone told the sponsor, have her call me, or maybe the sponsor thought of it. And I said, as long as you're doing the work, because the sponsor said that somewhere it says, if you don't do a question a day, I have to fire you. Oh, that word again. And I said, no. Obviously, she cares, or she wouldn't have had you call someone to get more information. But I said, as long as you're doing the work every day, well, it may not be as much as, you know, someone else, but you're still doing it, then that's okay. And she was. And she stayed. She said, because if she lets me go, and this is like the second time, I don't know if I can stay. I said, you can stay. Just be patient. Sometimes some people drag their feet, and if they start making excuses, whether they have a disability or not, I have to say, what's going on with you that you're not willing? And I would ask them to pray for the willingness to be willing, whether they have a disability or not. But yeah, you have to really listen closely. You can't be multitasking. You have to listen to the person and see what's going on. And you can learn to pick up on stuff. And I just say, keep trying. And that's what, you know what? I had to do it. This is what you have to do too. Just do the best that you can. Thank you. Are there, Paula?
I wanted to add one thing. I think it's just important to be, you know, like willing to do the work, willing to go to any length, like it says in the big book. But also, my son is borderline mentally retarded, and he's in another 12-step program, and he would act like he couldn't do anything. Well, I can't do it. I'm not smart enough. And his sponsor wouldn't let him get away with it, but his sponsor made him get a dictionary to look at the words so that he could understand what the, you know, what the different words meant in the steps in the big book. And so that really helped. And now they're really good friends. And it's, the sponsor has kind of become like a second father to him. So it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a friend in Seahaw who's in a nursing home. She's a paraplegic. And her biggest problem in this place is her food. She's worked several times with the dietitian. Her sponsor has met with the dietitian. And she just, you know, they just can't provide her with what she needs. She gets a lot of high carb stuff, you know. And she's really very frustrated about it. And like when, if I go, she lives about an hour away, I'll go visit her sometimes and I'll take her stuff. Her sponsor doesn't actually lived near her, but now she moved away. But, you know, it's just, it's really hard for her. Do you have any advice or suggestions I can give her?
Yes, we did have a beloved member who was in a nursing home who has since passed away. And what would be helpful, and what I learned from her, is have a conversation with the doctor. And if the doctor orders the food plan, they're more likely to do it. But it has to come from the doctor. That's helpful. The other thing is, if that facility will not cooperate, then might have to look at a different facility, but I would try the doctor's note first. And it is frustrating because the carbs, they're cheaper and they want to save money. That's the bottom line. But if you do it through the doctor, it should be helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, getting it from the doctor. Because I've been in hospitals a number of times, oh my goodness. And that was one thing my sponsor would tell me, talk to the dietitian, don't talk to the nurses, don't talk to the, you know, the other people. Talk to the dietitian in charge. And sometimes they listen, sometimes they didn't. But I think it's a great suggestion. If all else fails, there's other nursing homes out there that want your money.
Any other questions or shares? I mean, take advantage that we're here. Any doubts, any questions, or anything that someone would like to share, they've had an experience sponsoring someone or even themselves. Come to the microphone, please.
It's Lynn.
Okay.
It's me, Lynn. I just wanted, it's not a question, it's just to thank you for being so vulnerable with us and sharing your experience, strength, and hope that is, you know, peculiar to your disease process. And it's really given me perspective. So thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. I would like to add one other thing about my talking scale. It's also good for people who have balance issues. Like if they look down, they get dizzy. My mom had balance issues and needed to get weighed every day because she had congestive heart failure. And if she started to look down, she, you know, wanted to fall backwards. And then it would change the weight because, you know, you're falling. So it was really good for her. She'd hold on to the counter with one hand and she'd get on there. She didn't have to look down and she could hear it. So it's also good for that. It's not just for good, I mean, not just, it's helpful to anybody that might have a balance issue. Mm-hmm. Anyone else would like to share or ask a question?
Doesn't look like it.
No?
No.
Okay, any closing remarks, friends?
I'll say one thing. Yeah, I'm still a compulsive eater, still Loretta. What Suzanne emphasized about giving service, I have a couple sponsees, one in one program and one in this program. That's all I can handle, and because I know my limits. But it's really, really important to be able to give service and to be able to give back. I do as much service as I can, mostly. I'm on phone bridge, so I do as much service as I can, mostly at the meeting level and intergroup. I was a delegate for 4 years, and I couldn't, that was too much for me. But I try, you know, I get out there and I try, and I'm always raising my hand, oh, I'll do it. And sometimes I just have to sit on myself, you know, to stop doing that. But it makes a huge difference because it energizes me and it gets me out of myself and it gets me listening to other people, and I'm in my house a lot, so it makes me feel like I'm more in touch with the world, and they are very grateful for it too. So it's a really good thing to do, as much service as possible. Keeps me out of self-pity. That's it. Is it Paula?
Well, I'm Paula, very definitely a compulsive eater, and I agree with Loretta and about Suzanne. Just because I do have a disability doesn't mean that I can't work the program. And I feel like services is really helpful too. I'm a delegate, this is my third year in a row, which is a major miracle, you know, for me. And this program has given me so much, and I agree with it, you know, giving back to the program. And I guess I would just want to inspire people that recovery is possible, you know, regardless of having a disability or not, because this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful.
And I'm Suzanne, grateful compulsive eater, and I'll just finish with this. The person that told me, "Darlin, you're our new intergroup rep," she would say to me, you know, it wasn't a question, she's like, "Darlin, you're it." She had faith in me. She would say to me sometimes, "You know, you don't have to share that you're blind. I don't always share on the phone much that I'm blind. There are times that I do. There are times that I do." And I said to her, "Do you know why I share that I'm blind? Is because if it helps one person, thinking, oh, she's blind and she's doing service, then I can work this program and be of service. That's why I do it. I'm also a delegate, thanks to someone else that came along and said, you want to be a delegate? And I said, I can't. And she said, I'll help you, and she did. She helped me write the motion. Well, actually, it took a few people to write a motion to have a special needs committee, and I owe a debt of gratitude to her forever. It took people to ask me, but I knew that it helped me get out of myself. Service is freedom of bondage of self. And then through a few things, a few reasons, I became Area 10 chair. I do not have any computer skills, okay? It's not a requirement. It sure does help. I've learned to do things other ways. My husband helps me a little bit. Other people volunteer. Someone very near and dear to me that I love very much, when all the motions came in and my I get emails through voicemail, would not read them. I was going to ask somebody, and the day they were sent, I got an email from a friend and said, I have the motions, would you like me to read them to you? That's what this program does. There are people who are willing to help me. Sometimes I need to ask, and sometimes I don't have to ask, but I've learned to accept help, even though sometimes when I don't ask for it, I need it, and I've learned to accept help. And so I've been able to do service despite all the impediments that I have. I'm, you know, computer idiot, I can't see, whatever it is. It doesn't stop me. And if that encourages one person thinking, well, gee, she's blind, and doesn't know how to use a computer, she's doing service, maybe I ought to do a little more service, please think about it. Because we need to be of service to carry the message to everybody. And that is the message that I want. Except that we, you know, not everybody has the same issues in life, but we're all here for the same reason, and we can help each other. And let's be open-minded, the O of the how, let's be open-minded and willingness to support each other and sponsor people that may be a little different, whether it's medical abstinence or a special need or both. Please be willing. Thank you for letting us be here. Thank you for letting us be here today. I also have a speech impediment. I'm sure a lot of you knew that. I had a cleft palate, and sometimes my mouth doesn't always work the way I want it to. It doesn't always work. So thank you for letting us be here and putting ourselves out here and being vulnerable. But it's for you guys. It really is. Thank you for letting us be of service. So let's close with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
And I want to thank Susan, who asked us to do the workshop.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for your service.